Today's episode of the Poolside Genius is all about risk and reward. All-star games, are they worth risking injury? Also, the home run derby, does it ruin swings? Next, we look at Tim Tebow, AA All-Star, and take a look at the top two sport athletes, which many of them have incurred mighty risks, which plays into our last segment where we take a look at those two sport athletes and is it worth it at the higher levels. And then we also dive into the lower levels like junior high and high school and whether students should be specializing at those lower ages. Have fun.
This is Poolside Genius, where we always make a splash.
Today we've got huge matchups shaping up and huge races shaping up in Major League Baseball. We're seeing scorching baseball in the East Coast, you know, both in the NL and the AL. And we're going to approach the All-Star game, you know, the All-Star rosters were just revealed. And we're going to take a look at this. You know, we kind of hinted about the All-Star games and whether they're really valid, whether they're worthwhile for, you know, all the groups involved, you know, and that's certainly up for debate, especially when we look at baseball's All-Star game.
The way I look at the All-Star game, in your respect, probably, Bender, is the big question is DeGrom going to be the starter? You know, that after that, you probably tune out. If you just really want to compare all of them, they're all brutal, very difficult. The interesting thing to me is you start to see now the NHL starts to tweak their All-Star games to mimic a much faster game, something different, how they're looking at tournaments. So in regards to All-Star games in general, they're difficult to watch. Baseball's probably the easiest, but then you could probably delve into, is baseball watchable at all?
I mean, I think people have been saying that, you know, the NHL's adjustments have made it much, much better. And, you know, that's certainly a big part of the whole equation. But at the end of the day, you know, baseball is, it's tough. You know, they had the Bud Selig debacle many years ago. Then they said, hey, it counts this year. Hey, great. You know, wow, home field advantage. Guess what? Nobody cares. And, you know, they're not playing the game hard. And, you know, think about it. As a fan, how would you feel if your favorite player, your team's workhorse, went down if you know, well, we can't say Jacob DeGrom because, you know, the Mets they're out of it. There's no racing there. I mean, you know, they stalled at the start anyway. But say he went down, how would the fans react to him starting the All-Star game and going down in the All-Star game and, you know, ruining, you know, his chances? You know, maybe he has to have a surgery, you know, God forbid, but, you know, keeps him out of next year.
You know, the interesting thing, what I've kind of, you know, branching off of the All-Star game itself, the events before the actual game, for instance, the home run derby, compare that to the NBA dunk contest or the three-point contest. The interesting thing, how I look at that, is that the home run contest, you start to see hitters that go into this contest almost change their swings. And I've seen big-time hitters that potentially are in races really mess their swings up. I mean, you could go down the list. Aaron Judge last year, believe it or not, he stormed onto the scene in early 17. Second half, he really struggled. He had that great home run derby. He really struggled in the second half.
With Judge, do you think that's more of a coincidence, though? I mean, you know, he's a younger guy. You know, people had a chance to study him a little bit more, and he's
second time around. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe 162 games is a long time. You know, maybe he wore down. You know, I don't know that we can all of a sudden deem it the Madden curse.
Well, let me run down a list for you. Robbie Cano and Cargo, 2016. They both got into that finals of the home run derby. They both struggled in the second half. Jock Peterson, granted, you could probably say Jock Peterson's a journeyman, or he's really struggled with the Dodgers. He had a great 2015 derby. Second half, he was crummy. Robbie Cano again in 2011. David Wright, there's your boy, 06. Great derby. Where's he? Now, granted, he got hurt, but he's never been the same.
Whoa,
Bobby Abreu, 05. He won the thing. And then he had an awful second half. There's some evidence there.
You know, with Bobby, it was, you know, he was the king of the, you know, we're down by 10 runs and I'm going to hit a 2-run homer. You know what I mean? He always fell, definitely not clutch. Right, you know, and he's had the injuries. He certainly, people point to that home run derby as something that has completely changed his swing, you know, has caused a lot of issues.
Could have gotten him hurt.
He also got hit in the head with a fastball and had those concussions and those sort of things, and that seemed to be where he really started to decline a little bit. But Cano and Cargo, those guys, you know, they're old.
Well,
I mean, well, you know, they're also
not your classic home run hitters.
Well, yeah, and the whole idea of the home run derby, you have to be smart about it. I can't put it any other way. If you think that's going to mess up your swing, you just say no.
I mean, this year, right now, you're looking at Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez. Both have declined. I think it's smart. I mean, you're looking at a Red Sox team that is destined to be in a very tight race. Good for them. The problem, though, is how does that then affect the overall event?
Well, if you got rid of the home run derby, I don't think there'd be a ton of people that are tuning in. I mean, the game itself is a snooze fest. You know, you like to maybe say, wow, it'll be really nice to see one of these starters who actually get to let it loose for an inning and really see what kind of gas they can throw. That's nice. But beyond that, the game doesn't really offer a whole lot. I think with the home run derby, you know, it's the main attraction. I think really we need to start looking at All-Star games as those types of skills competitions, you know, even if you go to the NFL, the NBA, you know, make it skills competitions, things that we haven't seen these guys do before. And, you know, it'll be entertaining. You know, it's not as much of a cutthroat, you know, atmosphere, because you're not going to get a cutthroat atmosphere in the Pro Bowl, in the All-Star game, you know, in the NBA All-Star game. It's just, that's not the way that it works. It's not the way they're programmed. They're not really getting paid very much at all to be there. So let's make it a fun activity, you know, something different, something fun.
I mean, you look at the NFL Pro Bowl, that's absolutely horrendous. But, you know, you start changing it into a 7-on-7, then the offensive linemen don't get to go, and it's probably in their contracts for some incentives. So there's all these behind-the-scenes issues. The TV networks, maybe they really need those events. Overall, obviously, we're going to agree, they're brutal. It's just a matter of, where do we go from here? It's quite debatable.
All this All-Star talk has me thinking about one of the biggest All-Star events of the year, and that is the AA All-Star game. Tim Tebow is now a AA All-Star in Minor League Baseball. Those tickets have gone from, I think, about $25 up to well over $100 a ticket in the secondary markets, all because of Tebow mania attacking AA baseball.
Where's he playing again? Is it the Denver Bronco fans hitting that again?
No, that would be the AA Binghamton Rumble Ponies of the New York Mets organization.
Because we know a couple Denver Bronco fans that just love Tebow. But, hey, good for him. You know, he's really made a commitment for his second sport here, baseball, and he's really gone through the grind.
Could you argue that as a professional, he might be even better at baseball than he was as an NFL quarterback?
As of right now, I certainly would say he has the opportunity. He has the upward flight. If he's going to be a AA All-Star, he's probably going to have more staying power to be a MLB possible rather than a football player that would really struggled with his accuracy.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to this, we start thinking about all time. Who were some of the greatest two-sport athletes that we've seen? You know, who are some of our favorites? I mean, who comes up first on your mind, Reams?
It's got to be the man, the myth, the legend from Auburn, Bo Jackson. You know, just watching him both in Auburn and with the Raiders, I mean, he was just a beast. And granted, you know, the whole hip injury really derailed what was, in my mind, an easy Hall of Fame career. I mean, he was just magnificent. Then you get the picture of him for the Royals running up the outfield fence. And, you know, I think he came up with like 150 home runs. I mean, he was on a definite incline.
Do you think Hall of Famer in both sports, you know, and again, it's really easy to say if somebody stays healthy their career, well, they didn't. But, you know, if he was healthy, do you think he could have been a football and baseball Hall of Famer?
You know, I would definitely say football by far. If he had stuck with it, you know, it makes you wonder. He was probably very smart. He recognized that the wear and tear of being a running back gave him a short shelf life. as a football player, though, he was destined for Canton. In terms of baseball, tough to say. His numbers certainly were pretty magnificent, though. The home runs, the defensive skill he had, he was magnificent.
I do think, though, that, you know, in any event, I think he might have chosen baseball, like, down the line in a way to prolong his actual athletic career, his earnings, all those things.
He certainly did go in that direction. In terms of other two-sport stars, who comes to your mind?
What do you think about our guy, Deion Sanders? Prime time.
He's not my guy.
Hey, 94, great performance, defensive player of the year.
We could do a whole pod. Was he actually a Falcon to go in? He went in as a Falcon. Should he have gone in as a Cowboy?
No, he should have. He went in as a Falcon. He should be a Falcon.
That's a whole another podcast we could have. But no, in terms of his baseball career, the stolen bases, he hit for, I believe, 260 to 270 average. He had that ability. I mean, I remember him the one time going to play for the Falcons and then getting on a helicopter and playing a night game.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people hold that against him. They said, you know, that was a selfish thing. That was a self-promoting thing. But, you know, to me, that's a gamer. That's a guy that wants to play. He wants to make an impact on both. And sure, was it a lot of it? Deion Sanders, primetime, neon Deion, trying to make a star out of himself and, you know, get that light shining even brighter. Absolutely. But that's what you want. This is an entertainment business. And while we love the competition, nobody did it better in the defensive backfield than Deion.
He backed it all up, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he's excellent. But, I mean, we could go back even further. And, you know, let me throw this one at you. What about Jim Thorpe?
Oh, no doubt about it. He had certainly the experience of being that two-sport star. And granted, so many people were involved with sports back in those days.
Yeah, and that's a little bit different, you know, a little bit before our time. But I think it's always nice to mention him as someone that is a big-time two-sport athlete. You know, another guy that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, Brian Jordan, you know, had a nice career with, I believe, the Cardinals, the Braves.
Yankees,
you know, he was all around, you know, played some safety for the Falcons. Again, a guy that, you know, had a really nice career with both sports.
You mentioned your guy, Deion. I'm surprised you didn't talk about Marquise Goodwin. I mean, there's your current guy, and, of course, you know, being a track star, he's going to fit nice in with Shanahan, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, Marquise Goodwin, you know, he had huge production last year for a guy that people thought, hey, he can only run fast down the sideline. Kyle Shanahan actually was forced into and wanted to use him in multiple ways. He, especially after Pierre Garçon got hurt, he really got into allowing Marquise Goodwin to use the entire route tree. The other thing, I don't know if you saw it on Twitter or Facebook, any other social media. How about Marquise Goodwin, you know, showing his mom and his sister with cerebral palsy the beautiful house that, you know, he bought for them. I mean, just a heartwarming story, especially after, you know, this guy has gone through so much, lost a son.
Using the virtual reality that he was showing them through virtual reality. It was a very nice gesture, absolutely. But there again, once I'm surprised you didn't go off with Shanahan there like you typically do. But absolutely, Goodwin, you could go down the list of two sports stars and the issues, and we could debate that for a very long time.
All this talk about the two-sport athlete, you know, how dazzled we are by their ability to play these multiple sports, it got us thinking, you know, what's the benefit to the actual athlete? You know, what are they really getting out of being a two-sport athlete? Should they pursue that? You know, especially we're talking about like the higher levels right away here, you know, the elite Division I, NFL, MLB, NBA, etc. Scenario. You know, is it worthwhile for them? Is it worth the risk?
I think you have to take each case separately. You look at Bo and Deion; they were simultaneously playing two sports. I think, in regards to what they were trying to pull off, it helped their brand or brought them attention. But if you take other athletes, for instance, some guys in college who were playing basketball, Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez, for instance, they took their basketball skills and arguably they went into the NFL and you could say they're Canton bound. They were just were dominant tight ends. So they took their skills from one sport, certainly parlayed it into another.
Yeah, and I think that's great, and I think that's certainly doable. And I think, you know, football is one of those sports where it's a lot different than a lot of the other sports. You know, as a pitcher, you have to have a certain set of skills, and it's very skill-based. You know, as a basketball player, you're going to have, you know, a certain set of skills, a certain body type. Whereas football, we're looking for a lot of different body types. We're looking at, you know, you have your offensive lineman, you have your defensive lineman, you have your receivers, your running backs, your quarterbacks, and a lot of different skills. And I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, and football coaches are often looking for guys that play multiple sports.
I agree. I mean, you take, for instance, Jeff Samardzija. He was a receiver for Notre Dame. That long, lanky ability turns himself into a pitcher. So it helps there. Now, I'm going the opposite on you there, but, you know, a lot of NFL football players have delved into other sports, whether it's Drew Henson or John Elway.
Chris Winkie.
Yeah, there's a perfect example. A lot of different examples.
Yeah, and well, the thing with Samardzija, I think it was a great benefit to him that he played football and baseball, because then he could use that as leverage, you know, with the MLB team. You know, he could say, I probably would have been a first-round pick. I could easily pick football if that's what I want to do. So then he's able to parlay that into a bigger contract. Because ultimately, I think, you know, as much as I love the sport of football, I think most guys see greater earning potential, more longevity, and, you know, less risk of injury, and, you know, would probably take that baseball stance, although there are many that have gone the opposite direction too.
Look at leverage. I mean, talk about leverage with John Elway, for goodness sakes, when he, you know, he was working against the Colts, not wanting to be drafted. You know, the Yankees were somehow involved with that. He played that perfectly. And of course, we could talk about John Elway in a lot of different aspects, but there's plenty of different examples of two sport athletes who have found ways to make it work. Charlie Ward, there's another name for you. FSU, great quarterback. Everyone's thinking, oh, is he going to be drafted? Is he going to go into the NFL? He ends up playing for the Knicks for basketball. Russell Wilson, the other day, I think it was this year, wasn't he talking about going in and playing a little bit of baseball also again?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fun. That's a stunt. You know, that's publicity. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, Tim Tebow where he's saying, oh, I'm going to definitely do this. But again, Tim Tebow's options outside of the, inside the NFL were pretty limited. You know, he maybe CFL or something, you know, taking Chip Kelly's advice and going to the CFL, maybe that would have worked out. The XFL coming up or the AAF, you know, he already said, no, I'm sticking with baseball. Turned down Coach Spurrier, the head ball coach. You know, so I think that, you know, we're seeing a lot of these people. There's so many athletes that have this ability, but, you know, I think at some point they end up choosing one or the other. And, you know, there's a lot of risk factors that can come into it. I mean, you are not giving your body a chance to rest, to recover. You know, you're not getting that extra training and speed and conditioning. You're working all that time, and I think you can only go so long until the body starts to break down, a la Bo Jackson.
You make great points. You know, what I would add to it, you know, interesting with Tebow, he's always got the thought of, you know, getting his message out. I certainly commend him. But, you know, getting back to what you had mentioned in terms of what did the players get out of it, if we could back this down into the scholastic level, and you just mentioned rest and having your muscles regenerate and get, you know, having to be at tip-top shape. From the scholastic standpoint, we're both coaches. We both have, granted, for different sports, we're in a situation where nowadays you see kids, whether they're middle school or high school kids, they're either one sport all year round, or maybe, and some kids are, which we're all really good, you know, proud to see, kids playing multiple sports. You mentioned earlier football. They're looking for kids who play multiple sports, whereas other sports might look at, you know, we need those kids to delve into high skills, whether it's basketball. And I think what we see nowadays is there's that tug of war between kids looking to play AAU plus their school year round. They're only using the same muscles over and over again.
Yeah, Rams, and I would say that, you know, we see the stats for Tommy John surgeries. When people started to specialize, especially the pitchers, you're starting to see those injuries rise. And with that rise in injuries, you know, every single person, you know, doctors come out and say, look, you can't do the same sport year-round. It's not good developmentally. It's not good for your health. It's not good for your overall well-being. You need to get that your muscles working in a different way. You know, and I think that's something that, you know, at least where we're at in the country, in PA, you know, that works out for us because, you know, you can play football all year round. You know, we don't necessarily have the 7-on-7 tournaments and that sort of stuff quite yet like they do down south and, you know, in Texas and whatnot. So we're really focused a lot of times on, you know, you have to do something different, you know, whether that's weight training, speed training, that sort of thing. But most other sports are not that way. You know, look at baseball, you have fall ball. People will go and hit in the cages and throw all winter long. Then they'll be out in spring and in summer. And I think, you know, not only does it physically wear down the players, but it mentally can wear down the players. And I think that getting those different muscles being involved, playing multiple sports is always in the best interest, or most of the time in the best interest of most athletes.
We can go down the list of sports, whether it's volleyball or basketball or field hockey or soccer. They're playing year-round in different leagues. Yeah, you and I can sit here and say, try and get the message out, play multiple sports. But I'm wondering how many of those coaches that are in the AAUs or the travel teams, are they really sending that same message? I would hope they would be. And maybe I'm naive to think that they are, but I'm not so sure.
I think, you know, it's funny. I think that a lot of times that message gets sent when it's your sport that would be the second sport. It's, yeah, you should go out there and play multiple sports as long as you're playing my sport. But, you know, I think there are a lot of coaches out there that also have the idea that, hey, you know, my sport's the most important and you need to be there for all my stuff, or, you know, you should play AAU, you should do all these things. And it really devolves away from, you know, their message of playing multiple sports, where they really mean make sure you're playing my sport most of all.
I have a situation right now with basketball. Open gyms, I got kids going to tournaments for baseball, or they're in an AAU game instead of coming into the gym and practicing. There's so many different issues from the scholastic level that really gets clouded in a kid's eyes. So they have to really choose and choose wisely with all of the different options they have. And more options probably gives them more pressure.
I mean, and is that our fault? Is that our fault as coaches, as parents, you know, giving these kids so many options and making, you know, and sometimes I feel like a kid feels like they have to choose. You know, you throw in the whole idea of, you know, at the high school level, having job and, you know, maybe they have musical interests, maybe they're in the play. All these things really come into play. And, you know, kids, I think now more and more are feeling more pressure. They're feeling more stressed. They're feeling like they don't have their own time. And I think it's, you know, it really becomes tough. And, you know, you have to look in the mirror sometimes and say, you know, is that us? Are we asking them too much? I mean, I know just, you know, in the last 10 years, things have really increased in terms of off-season commitments and the necessity to be out there. And, you know, is that the right thing? Is it the wrong thing? I can't really tell you that.
It seems like kids have become more scheduled, and those schedules seem to box them in even more and more. And I think it's something it's good that we debate it. It's good to keep it in the forefront of our minds as coaches and as we plan ahead. It's just, this is not an issue that's going away.
No, and I think that it's only going to continue to be on the forefront.
Thanks again for listening to the Poolside Genius Podcast. Don't miss out on spending time poolside, so subscribe using iTunes, Stitcher, or any other major podcast platforms. While you are subscribing, we appreciate any feedback and 5-star reviews.
Remember, when you're poolside, always dive in the deep end.
Splash.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app free for iOS and Android.